Nath, please get the round of applause ready for a GP, an Australian Medical Association spokesperson. You and I and Hobart, we all have many questions about COVID-19 coronavirus. And joining us now to hopefully answer some of those questions is Dr. Jennifer Misson.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show, Jenny. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Jenny, how busy have you been over the last few weeks? Have you had a second to breathe?
Barely a second, barely a lunch break, but it's kept my days very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you, I mean, Nathan and I have so many questions, Jenny, but do you do research on this? Is there someone coming to you with information? Like, how do you get information about the coronavirus?
So there's a lot of white noise, obviously, through social media and anecdotal stories with coronavirus, but as a GP, I'm updated twice weekly or more frequently by the public health department.
Yep.
And so we get messages from them sometimes more than twice daily because it's changing all the time. So we have official means of getting information, plus we have federal level information. And of course, on a worldwide level, World Health Organization has useful information too.
So it must be hard to try and stay constantly updated with this thing, which is constantly changing, as you said, not just nationally, not just statewide, but globally as well. Is that a difficult thing to do?
It's difficult in the sense that it takes time. I mean, there's only so many hours in the day, but it's such a fascinating area of medicine for all doctors, I imagine. But as a frontline person, you know, I'm your GP. I'm the person you can phone up and see on a daily basis. I'm pretty easy to access. It's just part of my bread and butter, and I really love reading up on it. I love keeping informed.
So you're in Sandy Bay, yeah, Jenny?
That's right.
Yeah. So, again, excuse my ignorance on this, but do people come to you if they're feeling like they have symptoms of coronavirus? Should they be going somewhere else?
Well, we've had some really good public health messaging out there. So it's been nice to see that patients who think that they're at risk of coronavirus are phoning ahead, which means that if we think they need to be seen by the public health department, we can refer them off for further testing that way, or we can appropriately tell them to come in and have a review with us if we think that they would be low risk.
Jenny, as a state, how is Tasmania sitting in comparison to not just Australia, but I guess the rest of the world in terms of reporting and case management, that kind of thing? How, in your opinion, how are we sitting as a state?
I think we're doing a fantastic job. I think as the public, you don't really see all the background work that's going on with our public health service. Our health service is amazing. So there's probably 80 plus people sitting in home quarantine at the moment who are deemed to be high risk of having coronavirus, so they're being observed.
Yep.
Most of those people will not have coronavirus, but we're just really aggressively managing it. And the people who do have the virus are being monitored in hospital or in home quarantine up north. I understand some of those patients are still out in their community homes. But it's very, very aggressively managed here, which I think is fantastic. We've had the benefit of seeing what's gone on in other states in Australia and in other countries and acting in that way.
You talk about that self-isolation and there's that self-distancing and stuff like that, Jenny. I think people, again, we've got a bunch of questions here, but a lot of people are saying, should they be doing that? Should people be avoiding public spaces? Should they be staying at home?
Look, there's the official public health messages, and these are the things that everyone should adhere to, so that if you're deemed to be high risk, and if you're worried you're high risk, there's a self-assessment tool that you can use online from the Tasmanian government. I won't go through it today because everybody's probably seen it and understands what high risk is.
Yeah.
But as for the rest of the community, if you have a cough or a cold or a standard flu, you should be at home anyway. You shouldn't be at work. That has always been the case.
Yeah.
And I guess some of us push through inappropriately at times. So
I think that's the Australian way. It's not good, Jenny, but people will be like, I'll be fine. I'll push through. I don't need to take a sick day. But they should.
Exactly. Yeah, you should. Yeah. You know, you never thank the person sitting next to you in the office for coughing and sneezing on you. No one wants to see you.
No, you look at them and go, don't do that.
Jenny, we told everybody on our social media, on our Instagram page and on our Facebook page that we were going to have you on the show this morning. And we have been inundated with so many questions. So many people are unaware of so many factors of this virus. And of course, you're finding, even the doctors are finding stuff out daily, hour by hour. So what we were hoping is we're just going to quickly go to some ads. And when we come back, we're going to ask you a few of these questions that the people of Hobart would love to know the answers to. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure, I'll do my best.
Nath, we are still very lucky enough to be joined by Dr. Jennifer Misson. She's a GP at Sandy Bay Clinic, also an Australian Medical Association spokesperson. She still joins us on the show. Welcome back, Jenny.
Thanks, guys.
Now, another round of applause for you, Jenny. You deserve it.
Yeah, doctors are so great. Jenny, we've got a bunch of questions here, and I'm gonna just guess that you're not going to have the answers to these questions because there's one question that a lot of people are asking, and I'm going to kick it off with this. And it's people want to know when there's going to be an end date or when there's going to be a resolution to this. But, I mean, I like Nath and other people, you know, we're all doing our own research. We're all trying to look at stuff. There is no end date to this at the moment, correct?
There's no end date, no. I think we're looking down the barrel of months, really, because this is a global issue. So if you consider that Wuhan's been in lockdown for about 2 months now, their cases are dropping. We won't really have a good indication on what's happening in China, which has been the centre of, you know, the majority of infections, until they remove all of those restrictions as far as quarantine and whatnot go. So we don't know if we're going to see a rebound of infections there or if everything's going to be calming down and continuing to calm down. So there's still a lot of change coming, I imagine.
Jenny, is
that would be difficult for people to hear, but I guess because it's the fear of the unknown. You fear what you don't know in anything. Like, you know, you're waiting to hear about a job that you apply for. You're worried, will I get it? Won't I get it? I guess, Jenny, all people can do is just, again, listen to, you know, people like yourself, the authorities, medical professions, and just, I guess, wait and see how this plays out.
Yeah, exactly. And look, on the ground level, as an individual, everyone can help by having correct cough and sneeze etiquette and washing their hands, social distancing, avoiding mass gatherings, all those very boring, unsexy things that we keep saying to people.
Yeah.
They're important.
Jenny, when we eventually get out the other side of this thing, is it a matter of finding a cure, or is it more that we're going to have a better understanding on how to manage it?
So I guess there's two potential endpoints from my perspective, but I'm not a viral research person. That's not my background.
Yeah.
But from an infectious disease general perspective, I guess you would say the endpoint's going to be vaccination or community immunity, as in we all get infected, not all of us, but a big chunk of us get infected and develop immunity, and that blocks the infection from travelling to other people.
Okay.
So talking about transmission, that's another big question people have. Like, how is it transmitted? Is it only by touch? How does that work?
So it's through respiratory droplets, and respiratory droplets are your coughs and sneezes, saliva, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And that can be directly, like I could sneeze on you and then you could catch it.
Yep.
Or I might sneeze on my phone and then someone borrows my phone. So it's not necessarily that it has to be directly person to person. Like I might sneeze on my hand and touch a doorknob and then someone else touches that.
Yep.
So that's why we're saying wash your hands frequently through the day, even if you don't think they're dirty.
Okay.
We got another question here from Liz Evans-Good, Jenny. She's asked, why are we only testing people who have been overseas or have been in contact with confirmed cases? Why are we not testing anyone who has symptoms?
That is a really good question, and I get this question all the time, and I understand why people want to be tested. For one thing, we've got limited resources, not just at a local level, not a state level, not at a national level. We've got an international shortage of test kits, of masks, of gowns, of goggles. And every time I swab someone for coronavirus, I need to be wearing goggles, mask, gloves, gown, and have the testing kit, and then be able to clean my room, which has been in isolation, when I send them away. And so you can imagine that's a huge amount of stuff for a single patient. I will run out really, really fast if I'm testing everybody who presents to me with a common cold or flu. So we have to try and identify who's going to be best bang for our buck as far as risk goes, and that's why we have these travel or contacts with coronavirus criteria in place.
Jenny, how do you feel personally about this? Are you worried? Like, what's your feeling on it when you put the gloves down, you put the mask down, and you go home at night?
Look, my life is evidence-based. So I have to trust the experts, and I do. You know, I listen to the updates that I get each day, and I think we're doing the best that we can. We're giving the information as best we can, but we have to tackle this as a community. It's not enough for me to be washing my hands and swabbing people and giving the information. People actually have to take the advice.
So that stuff being like the washing of your hands, the you know, covering your mouth, you know, staying that stuff, like, hey, again,
sick, you know, it's very basic stuff, isn't it?
But yeah. But again, you're right, like you've mentioned it, people, you know, our friends and family spoke about it. It's not sexy, it's not the cool thing
absolutely
to do, but
not.
You are saying, as you know, medical professional, that this stuff will help.
That's right. I mean, preventative health is not sexy, right? I'm a GP. This is my whole life.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about the heart attack they didn't have because I managed their cholesterol.
Yeah.
Coronavirus is going to be the same thing. If this fizzes out in our community, everyone will say overreaction, big beat up by the government and the health department. What a joke. No, not a joke. Managed really, really well by the public health service, managed really well by our community. Jenny, let's hope that that's the case.
Jenny, before we do let you go, another question that's been coming through a lot on our Instagram, and is still coming through. We've got one here from Julie Smith. Obviously, we know fevers and temperatures are a big symptom of coronavirus, but what is classed as a mild temperature? Like, when are we worried about the temperature?
Look, mild temperature isn't a term that I use as a doctor. So, I guess you either have a fever or you don't.
Yep.
So what's normal is 37.5 or under. So if your temperature is above 37.6 or above, then you'd think, oh, I'm a bit too hot.
Yep.
But importantly, that's not the idea of that kind of guidance is not to get everyone to go and buy a thermometer. Really, if you're feeling hot and sweaty when everyone else is cold, or cold and shivery when you should actually be warm, or you're sweating in bed at night, they're kind of indications that you've got fever. So you don't need to actually come and see me in the clinic and say, well, I took my temperature with a thermometer and it's X.
Yeah.
I'll listen to your story, and that's what would guide me as far as your further investigation goes.
Amazing. Dr. Jenny Misson, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, a GP at the Australian Medical Association and a spokeswoman for the Australian Medical Association. Jenny, we really appreciate your time. All the best tackling this thing head on.
Thanks so much.
Good on you, Jenny. Thank you. Wow, that helped.
Look, I mean, I think that got some answers to some questions, but look, there's still a lot of unknowns.
There's going to be so many more questions that come through with this stuff.
Look, I think, you know, for me, Nath, it's just that simple stuff. Like, again, if we can, you know, avoid those crowds, wash our hands, cover our mouth, like the simple stuff, it seems to, as Jenny said, it'll make a difference.
Want more Jimmy and Nath? Download the Hit app. This is the show. Want more access to exclusive prizes? Become a VIP at hit.com.au.